Thank you very much, Jim, and good morning, everyone. I think this is very good that I'm doing this presentation after the UK, the US, and Korea, because as you'll see in a short while, it's the contrast of talking about a relatively small public health association and the World Federation, which in a way is supposed to be the federation that brings together all these associations. And Jim had asked me to talk about, to reflect on the World Congress that was held earlier this year in India, and to maybe ask about how can we maximize the advocacy and policy impact of the World Federation. So what I thought, well, I don't think there are enough people, but we're all required to do so, and you can see that I complied, and so just to say I have no relationships with commercial interests. So what I thought I'll do is to tell you a little bit about the Public Health Association of South Africa and its evolution, maybe highlight some of the achievements, the innovations, and challenges, which I hope you'll agree with me that they're quite remarkable given the lack of resources in a way that the Public Health Association of South Africa has. Then to reflect on the 14th World Congress on Public Health, and then I'm going to conclude with some critical questions to the Federation, which I think all of us have to engage with rather than to give answers, because I don't think that I really have the answers, and I think we have to develop those collectively as a federation. So just so you can see that PASA is an infant compared to the Korean Public Health Association, the UK faculty, or the American Public Health Association. So there's almost no comparison. We were established in 2001. It's a voluntary organization of health professionals focusing on, you can see very similar kinds of issues that all the, that's where our commonality is. We focus on very similar issues, on prevention of disease, promotion of health, and also improved functioning of the healthcare system. The members are health professionals and academics from schools of public health at universities, non-governmental organizations, and government. And its evolution has been influenced by two major issues, context and availability of resources. And again, as you can see, we're really small fry compared to APHA's 25,000 members. We have about 400 paid up members. So just in terms of the evolution, roughly the period 2001 to 2005-06 is what I call the phase one, where we actually looked at establishing the Articles of Association, which is just a different word for the kind of establishing the organization as a legal entity. Most of that period was really struggling with financial sustainability, and Colgate-Palmolive sort of came to the rescue with around 2004-05, providing sponsorship for both a conference as well as a newsletter. The period between 2007 and 2011 was devoted to growing the organization, improving communication because of lack of financial resources. When I became the president of PASA, we had a website that was hosted, that was quite static, that was hosted actually by another organization, and the newsletter was sent out to people as a PDF file every quarter, and if people were lucky. And it was also around looking at how do we actually build partnerships and networks with like-minded organizations. Roughly the period 2012 onwards, it's what I call phase three. We've managed to, it's a small organization, but we've managed to grow a vibrant and dynamic public health association. We've been focusing increasingly on public health stewardship, leadership and influence, and how do we improve health outcomes and also health system performance. Now, the factors that have influenced that evolution of the Public Health Association, as I said before, it's two major factors. The context, so the transition to democracy in 1994 saw many of the activists that were that John spoke about earlier moving into government. Another significant element is that up to 1994, most of the certainly international non-governmental organizations funded NGOs and activist groups in South Africa as part of a broader anti-apartheid umbrella. And so once we had democratic government, many of the funding dried up, and in fact they redirected funding support to direct government support. So for example, the Swedish International Development Agency, or SIDA, used to give money directly to non-governmental organizations in South Africa prior to 1993, and they did it via anti-apartheid groups in Sweden, and post-1994 they established, as the case of DFID, IDRC and a number of others, they established bilateral relationships with the South African government, in some instances providing technical support, some instances providing funding for specific projects. And there were also competing demands where there was a major dip in fact, many of the schools of public health struggled for survival. But paradoxically, the what I call the power of the decibel, the large central hospitals in urban areas in South Africa were the ones that shouted the loudest, and so those ones kind of almost made sure that they continued to get to draw large amounts of money from the public purse rather than it going to public health. So so PASA struggled with lack of funding, but also there's always issues around, and I think although people haven't spoken about it, Debbie spoke a little bit about it, is how do you make sure that, what are the benefits in a way that we give to our members? If you take the South African Medical Association, they have a journal, they have indemnity insurance, they have a string of things. And so, in contrast to the Public Health Association, where we try and make sure that our funding is ethical and that we don't take any money from drug companies, for example, and so it becomes a lot more difficult to then give benefits that people might want. It's also, as I'm not going to repeat this, the whole question of public health associations, in my opinion, should have ethical funding sources. So that we're not suspect to kind of the kinds of things that we do, that they totally delinked from the person or the people who actually give that money. And then of course the funding constraints mean that, so I always say that PASA, that one of our major achievements is that we're able to run an annual conference. Both Jim and Debbie have been at our annual conference, and it's a very vibrant, much smaller conference, but really no less intellectually stimulating than one that we are attending now. And so the fact that we're still surviving after so many years is a major achievement, because you'll be surprised to know that we do not have a single permanent staff member. And so I would love to, for example, have a CEO of PASA or a policy director, because I think we'll be able to achieve wonders with that. So some of the achievements have been that we introduced a much more structured planning process. We have a part-time permanent secretariat that's provided by the Medical Research Council of South Africa. We've reviewed our memorandum of association, and we've also made sure that we managed to get all our financial audits up to date, which might seem like a really useless piece of information, but if you want to raise money, then you need to make sure that you can prove that you can actually take good care of the money that you get. We have annual rotating conferences, which we now rotate between large cities like Johannesburg or Cape Town with some of the smaller cities, which is really amazing because we manage to get local interest generated when we have a conference in smaller towns. And I think one of the achievements also is that we have been able to grow a young generation. So if you come to the conference of the a PASA conference, you'll find that a lot, there are a lot more younger people who actually present and do so with confidence compared to many other conferences like the AIDS conference, where you're basically the same old people that present year in and year out. We've also managed to get increased involvement of members, and increasingly we find that our subgroups are growing. And recently we established a mental health and interest group on mental health, which hopefully will grow. There's been a great investment in communication with our newsletter, website, and social media. It's still not perfect, but certainly people now regularly go to the PASA website to look at jobs that are available, and schools of public health see it as a credible source to actually recruit additional members. So if they want to get a bigger pool of people from which to choose, they put they check the website of PASA. We've been able to strengthen partnerships with the African. In fact, PASA was instrumental with the establishment of the African Federation of Public Health Associations, which is a regional structure that brings together all the African associations, as well as the Association of Schools of Public Health. We've also grown our relationship with the World Health Organization in South Africa, although we could do much better, at the end with the World Federation, where at both the previous two conferences, the one in 2012 and 2014, we've arranged very successful theme sessions. And at the one in Kolkata, we actually did a theme session with the BRICS countries, the five BRICS countries, and that worked very well. When the Canadian Public Health Association, we did a small project looking at healthy workplaces, and particularly making sure that at least in the healthcare setting, there's no that we make those smoke-free workplaces, and also with other public health associations. Some of the challenges have been individual versus collective action. I was interested to hear, David, what you and John were saying. One of the challenges that we face is that many individual PASA members, because they're drawn from universities, they're very active in policy development. They often have a direct access to the Minister of Health. They sit on major technical task teams. They chair those task teams. They do so in their capacity as a faculty member of the university rather than of the Public Health Association. And I think that's a tension that certainly we face. I would be interested to hear whether the others that have presented, whether it's also a tension for you. So they represent the employing institution rather than the Public Health Association. We've been faced with major funding constraints in that we've had no infrastructure or permanent staff, and that has limited our ability to really engage with the policy arena or to influence activities. And an issue of few activities between conferences, that's another one, because we don't have permanent capacity. The activities tend to be geared towards the annual conference, rather than also look at how do we build the interest, how do we maintain the interest that we've generated in some of the smaller towns where we've had a conference. I'm now going to go quite quickly, I only have three more slides and I'll go through those quite quickly, which is really to reflect on the last World Congress. So as many you might know, and half of the audience, which is very small, was in India. We've had a conference in February 2014 in India. We've had 1,640 participants from 68 different countries. Certainly, the conference provided a vibrant forum to discuss and debate public health, and I think we need to acknowledge ourselves for the important role that the Federation plays in allowing that international networking. you know, of course, advocacy that comes with that kind of networking, even if it's at the idea of even if it's at the level of just getting ideas from one another about how to go about influencing policy in our own countries, and then of course in terms of knowledge generation. However, I think that the Federation has to address a number of critical issues and questions as it looks at how it should increase its policy influence. The first one is what I call again the individual versus collection collective action. Now, in this instance, the individual would refer to the individual public health association as opposed to the World Federation. So I think at an individual level, like in the case of South Africa, where individuals are a lot more successful to change policy actions compared to the association, yeah, I think individual public health associations. So the Americans are very strong. I mean, they're very circumspect in the way that they interact with the World Federation and sort of make sure that their strength doesn't kind of, that they deal with their strength very responsibly. But certainly the World Federation can't even, my sense is that the Federation must at least be as strong, if not stronger, than its individual members. That's not the case at the moment. A second one is around the Federation brand, which is not visible. I mean, I just thought about it last night. Even at this conference, the 12,500 people that are here, probably 12,495 don't know that there's something called a World Federation. And so the question is, how do we make the World Federation to be the go-to place for healthy public policy? A very specific example is the recently agreed upon sustainable development goals. Now, I'm not going to talk about the politics of the SDGs or whether I agree with them or not. The point is that we were largely absent from those debates around the sustainable development goals, we meaning the World Federation. It's also around, should the Federation be a mechanism where the research that's conducted by its member organizations, and when you begin to put together Korea, the US, the UK, South Africa, and all the other public health associations in the Americas, if you begin to put together all the research that those individual members have generated, we should have a significant body of evidence on what works, you know. So let's just take smoking, for example. And the action around smoking. So the Federation needs to have capacity to translate that research into policy positions. Many of you know that the big tobacco company went up in Geneva, just across the lake from WHO. What should have been our role, you know, in actually making sure that they didn't put up a big building across the lake from WHO? The use of social media, the reality is that many of us are middle-aged, you know, are very involved in the World Federation, but we have to think of the new generation who probably don't deal with the kind of tools that we had when we grew up. And then also, the World Federation is largely silent on important issues. I see that in the UK they've taken up e-cigarettes, but there was, is it just, even if it's nonsense, then we should be able to say, you know, so last week I know in the South African media there was a report about the how bad red meat is for you, you know. And now, it might just be, we all know as public health practitioners about the problems with sampling, you know, about the problems of only taking one study, you know, and that causality needs a whole lot more evidence before you can begin to link increased death rates, you know, with red meat. So, but we need to say that, you know, we can't just sort of can't just think that and hope that everyone else will know that. The visibility at other global health events, there's a major forum on health systems, which happens also every second or third year. We're largely absent from those. The World Conference on Tobacco Control, which is happening in 2017, incidentally in South Africa. You know, should the World Federation have have a presence in those conferences, even if it is just that we make a noise, you know, because if you make a noise, people are likely to either want to quieten you or they would want to listen to you. And then also I've raised the question of conferences of professional organizations. So should we look at collegial participation and branding? My last slide is also the activities between triennial conferences and communication around it. Acting on membership surveys, we've been doing a number of membership surveys, but we don't have the capacity or the money to act on them. Support, I think the World Federation should provide support, particularly to public health associations. And I'm asking, should we perhaps look at criteria to identify strengths of public health associations, and that we support the weaker ones? So one, some ideas would be that we look at twinning agreements. So it could be between a national public health association and schools of public health. We do know that there's a lot of resources often invested in universities, you know, so might that work? Or do you kind of twin the American Public Health Association and some of the activities with some of those in sub-Saharan Africa or in the South America? It's just some of the questions. I think we also need to look at overcoming funding constraints. I think something that will really propel the World Federation perhaps into the next phase is to look at permanent staff, particularly a policy director. So the work that Jim used to do in CPHA, we need somebody that would be able to liaise with all the public health associations and you know, provide a mechanism of, or the glue that would pull things together. And then I do think there needs to be strategic selection and decision on working groups. So once we decide, we need to say, you know, in practice, because of our constraints, both funding and capacity constraints, we can only have, let's say, two working groups, let's say on the environment and on the dental one. And let's support those, let's grow them, actually make sure that they're sustainable before we set up other working groups. I know the NCH one also has been an organic one, and that I'm not. Please don't take it at face value, the names that I've given. It's rather the idea that, you know, it would be better to have a smaller group, a number of working groups, instead of having too many that all kind of bumble along. So in conclusion, I do think that there's a trade-off between voice, policy influence, and the capacity of the World Federation. There are competing priorities, and we need to find a way of dealing or managing with them. It's around the issue of capacity building not only of the World Federation, but remember, it's a federation of member organizations. I think we need to put much greater emphasis on the new generation of public health practitioners and activists, and maybe that'll be our distinguishing feature, to look at the issue of financial sustainability. But above all, I think we really need innovation and thinking out of the box, instead of continuing to do things that we've done in the same way as we've done it for the past 50 years. Thank you very much.